The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the show, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Today, I'd like to discuss the spending bill that Congress passed last week. I've been meaning to do this in the last couple of days. It's just a lot to try to wrap your mind around. 2,009 pages, I think it was. It was agreed to in the early hours of Wednesday morning and then hurriedly voted on Friday. Everything's approved. $1.15 trillion in funding for the Obama administration over the next 9 months or so. Let me just play for you what House Speaker Paul Ryan said Wednesday morning at a news conference.
Let me be the first to say, I don't think this is the way government should work. This is not how appropriations should work. So we played the cards that we were dealt with as best as we possibly could. And inheriting a process, I know we need to restore to regular order. And I believe we've made the best of it.
So when the Republican architect of the deal introduces it by saying this is not the way government should work, you know it's a bad deal. It's a bad deal for anyone who's concerned about the out-of-control spending in Washington, for anyone who wants to just do the common sense thing of reducing the debt. What a horrible deal for America's children, for America's future. Now, I know Paul Ryan's camp wants to pin a lot of the blame on the outgoing speaker, John Boehner. He just had to come along and pick up Boehner's work and try to finish it. But still, he's the speaker of a house where Republicans have a majority. The Republicans, they've won landslide victories last year and in 2010. And yet here he is, his administration, Mr. Ryan's, I mean, pushing through this legislation and relying on Democrats primarily to get this bill through Congress. What does that tell you about who this bill favors? Let me just play for you a few excerpts from Josh Earnest's press conference. This is from last Wednesday, December 16th. Here he is discussing the transition from John Boehner to now House Speaker Paul Ryan.
Back when John Boehner retired, there was a lot of talk that these budget negotiations were going to become much more complicated, much more difficult. Do you see any difference now that the dust is settling?
Well, I think we have seen a willingness on the part of Republicans to compromise. I think one thing that is consistent with previous negotiations is that we've seen the deadline slip a little bit a couple of times. But there has been a good faith effort on the part of Republicans to try to find some common ground here. And I think that will be reflected in the final votes.
So really, there's no difference. A lot of voters out there, Republican voters, were hopeful that with Boehner stepping aside and now a new House Speaker, that maybe this time around it would be different. That maybe this time around, Republicans would stand up and fight the administration, fight to rein in spending. In fact, what happened last week was a total capitulation. And so after the monstrosity went through on Friday, of course, it was the White House out there immediately declaring victory. Total victory, in fact. Total victory Here's what Mr. Earnest said about all of the gains they got from this budget deal.
So we walked into these negotiations focused on making sure that Republicans would not succeed in advancing their ideological agenda through the budgetary process. I think based on all of the solid reporting work that you have done over the last several weeks, there were a variety of attempts that Republicans undertook to try to do exactly that. And we did succeed in fighting off those efforts. So, you know, we feel good about the outcome, primarily because we got a compromise budget agreement that fought off a wide variety of ideological riders, but yet ensures the priorities that this administration has identified when it comes to investing in middle-class families and protecting the country. We succeeded.
Basically got everything that it wanted. As I say, never mind the Republican victories, landslide victories in 2010, 2014. Never mind the fact that they control Congress, that they have the power of the purse. Never mind what a majority of Americans are pleading for, just pleading for. Instead, well, let's just give this president everything he wants and move on, and then talk about the fact that, well, it's a divided government and that, well, maybe we'll get a leader in the White House next year and we can do things differently. In fact, Mr. Ryan said next year will be different. Really? This bill last week fully funds the Affordable Care Act. It also further delays some of the penalties associated, some of the harsh penalties associated with Obamacare, so that Americans won't feel the pain of it until farther down the road. So that that act, so that Obamacare can be set in stone before Americans wake up to realize how painful, how expensive it really is. Did you know this omnibus bill also fully funds Planned Parenthood? All of those videos of all of that butchering going on, cutting up little babies. And then all the voices, when those were in the news, those videos were in the news, coming from Congress. We've got to defund Planned Parenthood. We've got to stop funding this organization. It amounted to nothing in the end. Many on the conservative wing are just infuriated by the fact that this omnibus spending bill pays for all of President Obama's refugee programs at a time when Americans are up in arms over what's happening in the southern border, concerned about what might come in from Syria or Iraq, especially after the shooting in California just a couple of weeks ago. And, oh, also, the bill funds the sanctuary cities that are there currently flouting federal law, disregarding federal law. And so the government continues its funding for these cities. Visas for foreign workers, that's set to quadruple next year. And guess what didn't get paid for or funded? Something that's been basically on the books or should have been funded for years. A border fence, where so many Americans want something like that, that doesn't get tacked on to this budget when so much else gets tacked on. The IRS, after all the scandals, it's set to receive a $290 million increase in its budget. And then you have all of the money now due to the climate change agreement in Paris recently, where the United States is going to be doling out lots and lots of money, billions of dollars, the largest spending in history on renewable energy. It basically funds everything the president asked for on this subject. Mr. Earnest talked about this briefly in his press conference from last Wednesday as well. Listen in.
The last thing I'll say about this is there also was an effort on the part of Republicans to try to limit the implementation of a wide variety of clean energy policies that this administration has long championed. This got less attention than some of the writers that I mentioned in response to your first question. But there were tangible efforts on the part of Republicans to limit our ability to implement the Clean Power Plan, to implement the Clean Water Act, to revise ozone standards, to include the social cost of carbon when calculating a variety of environmental rules, to limit the president's ability to implement the Antiquities Act, and to limit the ability of the administration to enforce the Endangered Species Act. Those efforts, the efforts by Republicans to undermine the implementation of those rules was also rebuffed. So when you take a look at the entire package, I think the country can feel good about how this budget reflects the priorities that the president has laid out when it comes to transitioning to the low-carbon economy of the future.
He thinks the country can feel good about this, but how is this going to be paid for? Who pays for these programs? All of these billions that now go out toward climate change, toward these massive social programs. The United States is already drowning in debt. And now you can tack on another $1.15 trillion in spending. I've mentioned before what the former senator of Oklahoma, Tom Coburn, said about the debt, the crippling debt that the United States has. He says history says we're not going to make it. He talked about how that democratic republics last maybe 200 years or so before they start to rot with from within. And he said, we're rotting. We're rotting from within. And we think we can continue on with this and somehow cheat history and somehow ignore basic financial principles that are actually revealed in your Bible. It's interesting, too, and that both of the senators, I believe, from Oklahoma, one of the more conservative states, many would say, in the United States, both of them voted for this omnibus bill. Everyone's in on it. There's a few, maybe like Coburn, sounding the alarm. Or Jeff Sessions. I'll play a clip from him in just a second. There's a few that are sounding the alarm. But where is the outcry? And where are the explanations of how this gets paid for? It's just putting more charges on the credit card. It's just adding more debt burden to our children, to oncoming generations. Well, assuming the United States even survived another generation or two, of course. Notice what Senator Jeff Sessions had to say in response to the passage of this bill last week.
This omnibus bill approves the president's request for increased refugee admissions, allowing him to bring in as many refugees as he wants, and he can bring them from anywhere he wants and allow them access to unlimited welfare and entitlements at the taxpayer expense, which is not scored as a cost. Under this bill, it will ensure that at least 170,000 green cards, that means permanent residency with a guaranteed path to citizenship, refugee and asylee approvals will be issued to migrants from Muslim countries just over the next 12 months. At a time of record immigration, we do not appreciate the scope of it. We're on track. We already have the highest number of foreign-born in American history. But I just want to say we're at record levels, both in total numbers and in a few years, the highest percentage of foreign-born in America will be reached, and it will continue thereafter. So is it any wonder that 83% of the electorate want immigration either frozen or reduced. And the Republican-led Congress is about to deliver the president a fourfold increase in one of the most controversial foreign worker programs that we have. Over the course of the last year, as chairman of the Subcommittee on Immigration and the National Interest, I sent appropriators a list of several dozen provisions for inclusion in our funding bills to improve immigration enforcement, block presidential overreach and lawlessness, including, among other things, provisions to defund the sanctuary cities. Why should we be funding, providing federal law enforcement monies to cities that won't even cooperate with the federal government in its most basic responsibilities? This bill explains why Republican and Democratic voters are in open rebellion, as former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich said recently. Open rebellion. They elect people that they believe are going to take action to protect their security, their jobs, their wages, and what do they get? Bill that is worse than current law. Goes in the opposite direction. No wonder people are upset. This legislation represents a further disenfranchisement of the American voter. What does a vote mean in this country? At a time when hundreds of thousands of criminal aliens who by law should be deported are on our streets, we've had hearings on this. Criminal aliens are killing innocent Americans. Numerous foreign-born individuals are implicated in terrorism. Tens of thousands of aliens from Central America continue to stream across our southern border. Countless Americans are being replaced by foreign workers and forced to train their replacements. And millions of other Americans just struggling to get by. So this Congress has chosen to make things worse.
A few highlights from Senator Sessions' speech last week in response to that omnibus spending bill, $1.15 trillion. Congress, he says, is taking us in the opposite direction that we should be going. It's making things worse. It's making things worse. You go back to what Josh Earnest said about this new budget, how it reflects the president's priorities. It sure does. It sure does. This is what this administration wants. Massive spending packages. Billions of dollars going toward climate change. Open borders. Record levels of work visas. And on it goes. Where does it stop? Will it ever stop? Well, you look into what the Bible says, not only about sound financial principles, but what makes this especially scary is that the Bible prophesies of a lot of difficult times ahead for the United States of America. And look at what we're doing, just making matters so much worse. We're rotting from within. The Bible says the wicked borrows and cannot pay back. That's what we see. A lot of wicked borrowing where there's never any explanation of how it's going to be paid for, of how it will ever be paid back. The wicked borrows and cannot pay back. That's what we're doing. We're stealing from future generations, taking money that's never, ever going to be paid back. And so much of the time, many of these big spending programs, they're sold with a line about, well, we've got to do it for our children. We've got to save the climate because of our children. We've got to, you know, have affordable health care. So children, so the disadvantaged can be taken care of. But where is there any push? Where is there any sincere effort to reduce spending, to cut cost, to reduce the debt for the sake of the children. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, "But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he's denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." If we don't provide for the needs of others, and that means others in the future, that means our offspring, God says we're worse than an infidel. God expects us to live responsibly so that we don't add financial burden upon our children, the oncoming generation. There's a proverb that says a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Where do you see good men like this in Washington? A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. That's his grandchildren. You don't see it. You don't see it. King Solomon, he pointed us to the example of the ant. This is Proverbs 6. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which provides her meat in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. They gather and save for the future. They prepare for the future. I want to take you through a section of Scripture here that I've actually gone through a couple of times here in lectures on campus. Luke chapter 12, the Gospel of Luke, and chapter 12, it says in verse 15, "And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses." Beware of covetousness, God says. That's what Jesus taught. Beware of covetousness. He says in verse 16, "And he spoke a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits." Well, so much wealth, so much prosperity, so much abundance. What should I do with all of this? And he said, "This will I do. I'll pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods, and I'll say to my soul, Soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." Well, you're so fabulously wealthy. Just kick back and enjoy. Enjoy the fruits of your prosperity. Enjoy the richness and the increase of your goods. Have we ever had that attitude? Has the leadership in the United States had that attitude? I mean, this nation, this is all discussed in U.S. and Britain in Prophecy. Where those blessings came from, it's true. It's true. The United States has been blessed more than any single nation on earth, in earth's history. But look at how we've squandered that wealth. Mr. Armstrong in the U.S. and Britain in Prophecy talks about how those great blessings of prosperity are now being taken away. And yet still, you look at the attitude, the approach, the policies coming out of Washington, D.C., and you would think, well, there's just money to burn. Verse 19 says, "And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, be merry." But God said unto him, "You fool, this night you shall be required of you. Then whose shall those things be which you have provided? So is he that lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." This is the kind of thing that goes on all over the world. Leaders who make great promises that they can never keep, even as they lay up treasures for themselves. But it's going to catch up with us. Which is why you, individually, have to take this as your cue. to be spiritually wealthy and rich in these very troubling times. We are facing difficult times ahead. Herbert Armstrong was talking about us reducing our standard of living back in the 1980s. What would he be saying today? How wealthy are you, spiritually speaking? It's getting to the point where that's all that's going to matter. Our sins are catching up with us. They certainly are. I'm going to read a few excerpts from the Modern Romans. This is a booklet that was produced by Mr. Armstrong's church back in the mid-1970s. And it's just making comparisons here to the fall of the Roman Empire and to what's happening in the United States today. It says the Roman Empire, this is talking about it toward the end, it was administered by big government. Big government. It was a vast machine. A vast machine that awed less organized and less disciplined nations. I mean, people looked at it and just thought, what a massive monster of a machine this is. But it developed alarming weaknesses we need to be warned of today. It says, long before the barbarian invasions of the reign of Honorius, the fabric of Roman society and administration was honeycombed by moral and economic vices, which made the belief in the eternity of Rome a vain delusion. Moral and economic vices. It says Rome possibly could have fallen several times in its history, but the leadership of strong men, despite other personal vices or shortcomings, delayed the breakdown of the empire by the institution of strong administrative reforms. I mean, it could have collapsed sooner, he says, if not for the leaders, the occasional leaders that would hold on. Strong men, strong leaders. It says after the death of Theodosius, that's AD 395, the decay of the Roman Empire in the West was rapidly accelerated. Following emperors were appreciably weaker and incompetent. But it wasn't just the bureaucracy, which was often criminal. The whole society was infected with the same corrupted spirit. Well, look at the debt spending you see right across the board in the United States. I mean, it's easy to sit here and criticize. But what about the way we live individually? What about the way our families live? It's easy to get caught up in deficit spending. It's like an addiction. This booklet here says about Rome, everyone stole. In the army, the clerks stole the pay. The commercial tradesmen charged with the service of the crop supply stole from the corn. They themselves were exploited by those set over the ports. The recruiters accepted for conscripts the refuse of the colony. The postal administration exploited travelers. Public servants took bribes for judicial audiences. This is the way it was in ancient Rome. Many forms of extortion became general practice and caused no great excitement. Well, that's just what they do. I mean, they're politicians after all. What can we do about it? It says civil servants increased their salaries by tips or fees. Soon, however, the difference between the tips and bribes became unclear, but often it was the only way to get things done. Well, you got to pay them off. It's the only thing. It's the only way to keep things moving. Here are all these Republicans just absolutely terrified. Terrified at the thought of a government shutdown, which amounts to about 10 or 15% of the government actually shutting down. But they're so terrified of the media and other voices that will pin the blame on them. They're so terrified of reducing any kind of cost that they opt for, well, let's just give this administration everything it wants. Everything it wants. The booklet says here, the crisis resulting from the administrative abuses elaborated by Diocletian and Constantine were a tragedy in the truest sense. There was a humiliating paralysis of administration in which determined effort to remedy social evils only aggravated them till they became unbearable. And then it ties it into today. Today, leaders in government, high and low, face an impasse despite all of their well-intentioned attempts to alleviate severe problems, social, economic, and political. Things only become worse. They are met by opposing factions and forces at every turn. Many of the more capable men are just throwing up their hands and quitting. And so it was in Rome. Many of the more capable ones are saying, "That's it, I've had enough." It says Roman bureaucracy, trying to tackle the vast problems in every area, couldn't keep track of what was being done. There's so many problems. There's so many departments. It's such a massive, big government system. How can it possibly keep track of what's being done? The difficulties increased in complexity and numbers. Result, the empire was forced to increase the number of individual administrators, which limited each one's authority and cut effective communication between each division. One governmental unit was not sure what another one was doing. This further complicated the problems of governing. Just an ever-growing, debt-laden, massive government bureaucracy. Finally, then, just to wrap up this excerpt, it says, today there's a growing consciousness of a credibility gap between what politicians and administrators say and what they actually do. And today, government, large and small, is held in ever-lowering esteem by growing numbers. Look at this election cycle that we're in right now. Isn't it basically a reflection of this ever-lowering esteem that the masses have for those in positions of power? It goes on, though, and says, the government's not always to blame for this situation. The moral character of many individuals is so poor that they've lost respect for any constituted authority, no matter what officials do. You see that on the streets in America. You see that in Baltimore. You see that in St. Louis. You see that now on university campuses. In ancient Rome, it says, it was government officials who provided the bread and circuses to keep unruly mobs quiet or to win public acclaim. Today, political office often goes to the man who can offer the biggest promises to the most, whether he can deliver them or not. The modern version of bread and circuses. Yes, keep the mob quiet as best you can with the bread and the circuses. With all these promises, it says, and yet, while government seems more distant than ever from the individual, more and more individuals look to big government to do even more for them. Government seems more distant, more detached than ever before, and yet look at how much more dependent the average individual is on big government. How is the United States going to get out of this mess? How is the United States going to correct all of these evils? How is it going to reduce its standard of living? It's not. It's just like this booklet says. It just gets worse and worse by the day. Which is why we need to be waking up individually and really digging into our Bibles and seeing what God says about preparing for the future, about being spiritually wealthy and rich, about being rich in faith. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, our headquarters campus. The live stream's available at kpcg.fm. Don't forget to send us your emails this week. Write us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A turning point in recent history has gone almost entirely overlooked. Since that time, an unseen cause has brought about national and world troubles in unprecedented fashion. Crises are intensifying as never before. In our generation, we are seeing radical changes to culture, family, education, religion, science, finance, politics, international relations. Everything has been affected. You cannot understand events without recognizing this unseen cause. The United States has been shaken in astonishing fashion. Have you wondered why the world's number one superpower is declining so rapidly? Are you concerned about where the current administration is leading this country? The Bible provides penetrating insight into the invisible cause of society's decline. America is prophesied to fall before it rises again. The Bible also gives extraordinary insight into how that fall will come about. This insight puts the seriousness and urgency of current events in their true perspective. Understand what's in store for America and why. Visit thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to request this free, enlightening booklet, America Under Attack.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just a couple more articles to go through here before we conclude. This one was sent to me by someone in Edmond that was struck by the title. It's from Business Day's, a piece by Business Day, rather, that says, Germany's giant's feet of clay exposed in turbulent year. Or rather, German giants' feet of clay, that is, using the same imagery that's described there in Daniel chapter 2. It doesn't have much more to say about the feet of clay in the article itself. But, of course, we know that with respect to the European giant, it's going to be a mixture of iron and clay. This article, like so many others, just to give you a few excerpts from it anyway, coming in now here at the end of the year, talks about, again, something you've been hearing a lot on this program about Angela Merkel and just how she was riding high early in the year. And then now there's these great dramatic changes all across the German landscape. This article here says Ms. Merkel began the year flying high in the polls with the EU's top economy humming and the German leader polishing her Queen of Europe crown as a valued mediator in the Ukraine crisis. But after a summer that saw Ms. Merkel preside over yet another exhausting round of bailout talks for Greece, her announcement in September of an open-door policy for the biggest refugee influx since World War II divided both her country and the EU. Great changes, dramatic changes happening in Europe. It says, while many took inspiration from her We Can Do It rallying cry, critics soon said that hundreds of thousands of newcomers would overwhelm communities and drive yet another wedge through the 28-country block. And that's what's happening. It says, for years it was the chancellor pulling the strings, but on the refugees, she's not managed to unite Europe behind her, and European partners are seeing that Merkel is being attacked by her own allies. Merkel's position was weakened by the crisis year of 2015. That's amazing. That's amazing to think about, particularly with respect to the prophecies about a coming strongman that not just Germany, but a downsized European conglomerate is going to rally around. The strongman of Europe. Boy, if we can't see that the stage is being set for these signature prophecies of Herbert Armstrong to be fulfilled, then we've got to be blind. Because here they are. They are happening before our eyes. Victor Davis Hanson has a similar piece just talking about how Germany, all these crises that we're seeing, it's revealing that for as popular as the leadership of Merkel has been and Germany itself has been, this is a powerful nation that's still motivated largely by self-interest. That's the truth. He writes here, and again, he gives a pretty good historical sweep, if you'll just bear with me. Germany's political stability and economic sway have until recently earned Chancellor Angela Merkel unprecedented global influence and powers, very similar to what the Business Day piece had to say. And then he describes what led up to this. Post-war Germany has become the financial powerhouse of Europe and a model nation. Give credit to German hard work and competency for the country's continuing economic miracle. Less appreciated is how Germany also brilliantly exploited the lucrative in-house trade framework of the European Union market, along with nearly seven decades of subsidized defense from an American-led NATO. So it had some help along the way. The United States, of course, is largely responsible for rebuilding Germany, even as it told Germany early on to denazify itself. Hansen says the result is that Germany alone now determines the fiscal future of the nearly insolvent southern European Union nations on the Mediterranean. Germany was also the self-appointed broker between Vladimir Putin and the apprehensive EU. In addition, Germany petitioned itself as the moral voice of Europe, in penance for an aggressive past that had nearly wrecked Europe on three occasions. It became the loudest critic of supposed U.S. imperialism. It says by the 21st century, German media, politicians, and intellectuals had superseded their French counterparts as America's most vocal European critics. From the Iraq War to eavesdropping by American intelligence agencies, in terms of tough leadership, Germany's Iron Lady, Merkel, had trumped even the reputation of Britain's late former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. In world opinion, Merkel was deemed just as decisive as Thatcher, but with a far stronger global hand to play and with a more popular embrace of social justice. In sum, he concludes, the new post-Cold War Germany was evolving into a leader of the West, especially during the American recessional from world affairs orchestrated by President Barack Obama. But no more, he says. In just the last 6 months, Germany in general and Merkel in particular have imploded. Just 6 months. And look at what's happened. Germany, he says, is imploding, but it's not so much that as it is its leader, Merkel in particular. Hansen says Merkel's disastrous decision to open the borders of Germany, and with them Europe's as well, is proving both selfish and suicidal. See, I think the one thing he makes a mistake with this piece is just kind of lumping Germany in with Merkel. But the way that he concludes it, I think it's a powerful conclusion. He says here, Merkel logically lectured Greece and its reckless borrowing, that its reckless borrowing could not be allowed to undermine the European Union. But isn't that selfishness similar to what Germany is now doing? With Merkel urging other European nations to take in waves of migrants and thereby inviting a flood of refugees across the borders of its neighbors, Germany's far poorer neighbors will bear much of the cost. He talks about some of the other scandals in Germany right now with Volkswagen rigging its emission system so as to hide the amount of pollution coming out of those vehicles. But then finally, Hansen says here, the Greek-German debacle, the migrant mess, the Volkswagen cheating, and the Putin aggression remind us that too often Germany's professed good intentions are eclipsed by German self-interest and all too familiar experience. an all too familiar experience. We need to be sitting up and taking note when Germany starts acting, or when Germany is motivated by self-interest. Because look at history. Now, we've talked before. I'll refer you again to Brad McDonald's piece, Europe's Old Demons Return. It's from the November-December 2015 Trumpet. But he talked about how Europe and Germany is experiencing a great transformation, a transformative identity crisis, he said. And he talked about the way Europe has been viewed these past several decades as modern and progressive and into climate change and the environment, human rights, and so on and so forth. But the problem with this, as Brad McDonald brings out in that piece, is that that's not who Europe is at its core. He says in his article, this is Brad McDonald's, perhaps the greatest effect of the refugee crisis, together with Russia's dramatic resurgence and Europe's rolling financial problems, is the way it's causing Europe to shed this post-war veneer and return to its past. Being tolerant feels good until hundreds of thousands of foreigners enter your nation. Reality, you see, is setting in. And Europe's shedding that post-war veneer. Europe's returning to its past. I mean, that's the significance of these articles that keep bringing out what has happened in just the last 6 months. What's happened with Ms. Merkel's administration, her popularity, Germany's leadership? What's happening is that Germany, and Europe along with it, is returning to its past. It's returning to its past. You think about those signature prophecies of Herbert Armstrong, Revelation 17, Revelation 13, Daniel 2 and 7. Of course, we've talked more recently about Daniel 8. There's lots to look forward to as we head into a new calendar year. Hopefully, in the days ahead, we can look back on the year that was. It has been a dramatic year in so many respects. And we'll try to bring some of that to your attention in one of our upcoming programs in the next few days. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily radio show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. The live stream, as you know, is available at kpcg.fm. You can also reach us through TuneIn and on iTunes, or go to thetrumpet.com and download the podcast there. So many different ways that you can listen to these programs, and judging by the listener response, there's quite a few of you that are using all of these different methods. Send us your email to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you again tomorrow.